What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends Podcast. Larry Rifkin along with John Krofcik. And of course, we are about to gallop into the future. And John, I don't know if you're going back to the future in a DeLorean. Is that possible?
Using the flux capacitor.
I beg your pardon.
Doc Brown.
I guess we can say just about anything on a podcast. Are you fluxing today?
We're fluxing. We're going to find the future today.
That's Do you floss every day, John? That's what a lot of people have been writing to me, saying,
"Really?
Well, yes, they're very curious about our personal.
Maybe we should do a podcast.
Hygiene. Should we do one on hygiene
flossing.
Of the future?
Flossing.
I think there are a lot of people who think hygiene is a greeting. I've seen them, and I've been around
them.
I
think Frank Zappa was going to find a dental floss range. Wasn't there a song?
Well, I think there was probably from Frank Zappa, and there were some other things that he left behind on stage that are less...
As I remember.
Absolutely.
And the yellow snow thing, but we won't go there either.
Well, today, John, there are some unmentionables, too, on this program.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, there are, really. And in fact, one of the unmentionables is the name of the book by the gentleman who is going to be our guest. And you've got to hear this, because if you want to understand our politics today in America, you are going to have to understand what happened in 2010 and what may happen in 2020 and how important it is every 10 years when we do a census. You know what happens when we do a census, John?
No, what happens?
Well,
they count everybody.
They take out the abacus. Because we're a little bit behind here in America. Certain precincts in America are a few decades behind. And they take out the abacus and they begin counting individuals.
They're using those.
The UNIVAC, yes. I actually used one for my foyer the other day. But, John, honestly, when you think about the way that we carve up political districts in America, no one can understate, or I should say overstate, how important that is. I mean, it can be determinant in terms of who wins and who loses. And you only have to go back to 2010. And I've got to give the Republican Party its due. They were remarkably creative, and they were able to take these districts based upon what it was that they saw in the census data. And they began to home in on various state Senate and state House races. So you may say to me, well, Larry, I thought we're doing a national podcast.
Yeah, I thought we were doing a national podcast.
So why are we back to talking about state politics and
exactly.
local politics? Why would we do that?
Why?
Well, That's it's right. because it's the state legislatures that determine what these districts are going to look like. And the Republicans were really, really keen.
But hasn't everybody done that? I mean, we see in our state how they've carved out kind of the districts so that... You know, people get elected time and time again.
Oh, they do play these games in every state. But what the Republicans were really smart at doing was capturing state houses, capturing legislative bodies, making certain that they had control of the dynamic in their state, because the majority party in these years, like 2010, 2020, 2030, have an incredible advantage. And then they took this overlay of technology. And they brought it to bear on what they needed to do with Operation Red Map. Operation Red Map. Sounds like something from Doctor Who.
Yeah,
remember Doctor Who?
I
was the unpopular guy here in Connecticut who made a command decision to take off Doctor Who. And they wanted to take me, put me in a TARDIS, and send me someplace. But we digress.
Yes, we do.
Let's get back to earth here, John. So seriously, this issue of gerrymandering, which is part of the American culture, has been... probably always will be. But whether, in fact, what the Republicans were able to accomplish in 2010 is going to be the bellwether for the future is really interesting because they were able to really clean the clock of the Democrats. So even if Democrats in a state get more votes for Congress, somehow they still lose Congress in their state by a number like 12 to 4 or 13 to 5. And they were able to carve up these districts so beautifully that while they weren't winning them by huge pluralities, just enough.
Is this legal?
And then they were able to put all the Democrats and minorities and others into a district where someone would win by 95% and waste all of those votes. This is a really fascinating story. And it's not fascinating only because it's history. It really is about the future, John. And there's
this,
a book out there.
Is this legal to do?
Well, that's a great question, because right now this issue by way of Ohio is in front of your U.S. Supreme Court.
Ah, okay. Well, that's good. Because this doesn't sound legal, but I don't really know how you take the politics out of making districts.
Well, you can. You can set up independent commissions. You can send it up and give it to a judge and say, take all of the data, all the demographics, and put it together and take it out of the realm of politics.
If you can do that, but then these judges are appointed.
All right. No, I know where you're going here, John. All right. So the human element cannot be stripped out of this. I understand. I really do. But look, the book is called Rat. Should I say it?
Oh, I guess you can say it. I guess.
Well, you can bleep it out, right?
Yeah.
John's the technical genius here.
Yeah.
Rat fucked.
Yeah.
The true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. And here is a brilliant guy. And his name is David Daley. And he was the head of Salon magazine. He's now with a group called Fair Vote. And these are folks who are looking for creative ways to make our election airing in America a little bit more fair. And really fascinating guy. You will want to hear this. And what they did was not illegal, John, to answer your question, at least for the moment. We don't think it was. But it was clever. It was cynical. But they did it. And that's why Republicans are likely, no matter what's going on in the White House, whatever chaos, they are likely to control Congress at least through 2020.
Wow.
And the Democrats have a lot of catching up to do.
Wow.
You want to hear this?
I want to hear this. This
All
is
right.
Very interesting.
How did we get rat? You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
David Daley.
Well, David Daley tells us in Rat Beeped, and we could probably say it on a podcast, but John and I on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com, we're just too gentlemanly, and we're not going to really say the word, but I think you people can understand it. He said that Republicans in 2010 surgically targeted key races in state legislatures in order to control state politics, which generally means they control the process of redistricting for Congress. And that sounds like a very clever thing that the Republicans did back in 2010. Tell us, David, was it as methodical as you make it out to be?
Oh, it's amazing. Gerrymandering and redistricting has been with us for as long as there have been politicians, right? I mean, you can trace it back to Patrick Henry. It goes back all the way to the beginning of the country. But really, after the 2008 election, Republicans reinvent the gerrymander in a thoroughly modern and technologically savvy new way. And really, it explains why we are this 50-50, closely divided country. But after Election Day 2016, Republicans control the entirety of politics in Washington, 69 of 99 state legislatures, a modern record of 34 governors, and they have both chambers and the governor in 25 of 50 states. So we're as closely divided as we ever have been, but one party has all of the power. And this is because of the strategy Republicans embarked on after 2008, after the big Democratic sweep. Republicans realized that, yes, they had taken a beating that year. I mean, Democrats had a supermajority in the Senate. They had a big majority in the House for Speaker Pelosi, and you had the historic election of our first African-American president. What Republicans realized is that the truly important election, however, was coming in 2010. 10. Because of redistricting, it happens every 10 years after the census. If you could understand the process state by state, if you could understand and study the rules and figure out how to have every seat at the table when the lines were drawn in key states after the 2010 census, you had the power to rewire American democracy at its most fundamental level, these building blocks of our state legislative and congressional districts. It's a brilliant idea. It's amazing that it hadn't been done in quite this way ever before.
So what happens to the notion of one man, and pardon me, and woman, one vote in this process?
Well, I mean, I think really it gets thrown out the window in many ways. What Republicans did was they targeted 107 state legislative seats in 16 states in 2010. And by winning those seats, they had the power to draw 193 of the 435 congressional seats all by themselves in 2011. That gives you a pretty good head start towards the 218 that you need. What we're seeing, though, is that 402 of 435 congressional races are not even close. You only have about 33-34 swing seats left in the country. You only have a small handful of those that are competitive elections within 5%. You have next to no races that are truly competitive. So in many ways, when that happens, our votes don't have the same meaning. When partisans are packed into districts that are non-competitive, what you see is that the only race that then matters is the party primary. So our politics becomes a race to the extremes. These non-competitive districts put us into a death spiral. Our politicians are not able to compromise. They're not able to talk to one another. They're not able to govern and get things done, even on things where most of us agree that there ought to be action.
And it would seem that they cede a lot of authority to the executive branch because they are gridlocked. And then we see signing statements, executive orders, taking the place of true legislation.
We saw that under President Obama. You see it now under President Trump. What we have is a government that is unable to be productive. It's a government that's unable to solve problems. We think of the art of politics as being able to talk to one another and being able to come together for the common good and address serious contemporary problems. And our government right now is fundamentally incapable of doing that because of the way we're districted.
Okay, now I want to go back. You talked about 2010, and there's a gentleman that you reference in your book, Chris Jankowski,
yes,
and this Operation Red Map. Just to really illustrate what we're talking about here, I mean, that this was really a certain strategy. And what I loved was when you cataloged certain of the races, and there was one, I believe, in Pennsylvania, where this guy got inundated and he really got lathered by this Arlen Specter library. But use that as an example.
Sure. Well, let me give you a little bit of background first. In Pennsylvania, redistricting is done by the state legislature, and the governor has veto power over the maps. So the Pennsylvania state legislature, heading into 2010's election, was controlled by the Democrats by one seat. It was 102-101. So Operation Red Map is short for Redistricting Majority Project. And what that was about, it was about targeting state legislators, flipping control of these legislatures toward the Republicans so that when it came time to draw the maps in 2011, Republicans were the only people in the room. So in order to pull that off in Pennsylvania, they had to capture the state legislature. They targeted six Democratic incumbents, including one man named David Levdansky, who was the chairman of one of the key tax and spending committees in Harrisburg, but he was a 12-term incumbent from just outside Pittsburgh and sort of the conservative Democratic former steel towns.
Mm-hmm.
down there. And Republicans searched and searched for an issue that would work to take these Democratic incumbents out. And they spent this money polling and focus group testing, and then they hit on something. As part of the state capital budget, which Lev Dansky had pushed through, there was something in there called the Arlen Specter Library. Really, it was a university repository for all of his papers. He'd been a 6- or 7-term incumbent, a U.S. senator. He was about to lose an election. He's at the end of his career. He's very unpopular. He had just switched from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party, trying to salvage his seat. It would ultimately be unsuccessful. This was about $1 million expenditure in a $600 million capital budget. But what the national Republicans did was they came up with these amazing mailings, these 6-color mailings, 4 or 5 pages. And for the last 3 weeks of the campaign, every single day, every voter in the district gets a mailing about how David Lev Dansky made possible a $600 million Arlen Specter Library. It's brilliant. And Lev Dansky couldn't do anything about it. I went down and met with him, and he pulled out a file of all of these flyers and just said, I couldn't do anything about this. He's like, I wouldn't.
Well, didn't he say that I wouldn't have voted for me?
Isn't it amazing? He's like, if I had gotten all of this, I wouldn't have voted for myself either. He would knock on doors, and people would shake their heads and be like, Dave, I was hoping you'd come by because I wanted to ask you about this. And they'd pull out the flyer. And he'd be like, okay, it was $1 million of a $600 million capital budget, but people were in no mood for it. Lev Dansky loses his seat by 150 votes. Republicans take every seat in redistricting in Pennsylvania. Excuse me. Republicans take the state house, the state senate, and the governor, so they control every seat at the table in redistricting. In 2008... it is 19 seats in Pennsylvania in the House, 12 Democrats, 7 Republicans. In 2012, the first election held on the maps that these Republicans draw in 2011, 100,000 more votes for Democratic candidates. Republicans win 13 seats, Democrats win 5. So less than 50% of the votes nets Republicans about 72% of the seats. And this is what plays out in state after state in 2012. Nationally, Democrats get 1.4 million more votes in 2012. But these district lines are the Republican firewall. And Republicans hold the U.S. House 234-201. In Michigan, 240,000 more votes for Democratic candidates. Republicans take 9 of 14 seats. In Ohio, Republicans get about 51% of the vote, but take 12 of the 16 seats. In North Carolina, 10 of 13 seats. And when you add all of this up, it becomes enough to hold on to the House. This strategy works brilliantly for the Republicans, less brilliantly if you believe in the concept of representative democracy.
Okay, so you're looking at 10 years. If you can do it in a census year like 2010,
right,
then you're looking to ensure your repeated victories time and again until at least 2020, correct?
I think that's right. And the trouble is we don't elect these politicians for 10-year terms. We elect our state legislators and our congressmen for a 2-year term.
Right.
And that's for a reason. We don't want them insulated from the ballot box. We want these chambers to swing with the voters. And I mean, I was the editor of Salon, so I mean, my politics are my politics. But this is not a book that has its thumb on the scale. I believe that the side with the most votes ought to win, whether that's the Republicans, whether it's the Democrats, whether it's the Libertarians or the Greens. Let's be sure that our democracy swings and goes where the people go. And the trouble is that in these last several elections, that's been impossible in Congress, and it's been even more impossible in states where Democrats often get more votes in states like Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, North Carolina. Republicans have held super majorities in many of these state legislatures, which has allowed for the enacting of a very conservative agenda in these purple states. And even when the politicians go too far, they're not really accountable to the voters. And that's dangerous. It's dangerous when either side has that kind of power.
Well, let me ask you, what role has technology played? How predictable? Because I know they're using very sophisticated measures to figure out ethnographically who
right.
we are and how we behave. But are we like chimps? Were we all, I mean, because they can categorize us, we always go true to form. I mean, what does it say about the voter in this process?
We have become more polarized. We have become more partisan. We all wear our laundry, it seems, for Team Red and Team Blue. There are fewer ballots that are split these days. And I think in part that's because the parties have become more polarized. I think districting in some ways has helped them become more polarized. But, I mean, we're in Connecticut. There was once a breed of New England Republicans.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Lowell Weicker, Christopher Shays, Nancy Johnson. You saw this in Massachusetts, William Weld. That kind of New England Republican doesn't really exist anymore.
Well, I think
you
New England, at one point, we had no Republicans in Congress.
Yeah,
at one point.
You once had conservative Democrats in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a very liberal Democratic Party and a very conservative Republican Party, and that group in the middle is gone. The moderates are gone. And technology plays a huge role in allowing, especially when we are as partisan as this, all you need to know essentially is how somebody votes, and you can draw very effective lines that are going to be durable and they're going to hold for a very long time. And there's more information out us. There's more information out there about us than ever. These map makers have access to all of it, and they have and they use incredibly powerful and sophisticated software programs to draw these maps.
But why did only one party figure this out?
Boy, I think that is the $100,000 question. I think that the Republicans were perhaps more desperate to come up with a new plan. In a lot of ways, I equate this to Moneyball, the Michael Lewis book about the Oakland A's and how the Oakland A's as a small market baseball team had to come up with a new plan to compete against the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and all the big market teams. So what they did was they looked for a loophole. They tried to identify the kind of players that would succeed who were younger, and they looked for, like, different skills. Republicans after 2008 find themselves facing a real demographic problem, a real population problem, and they had to reinvent politics. They had to find a loophole, and redistricting became their way to find the kind of undervalued asset, in the same way that for Michael Lewis in the book, it's overweight catchers with a high on-base percentage. For Republicans in 2010, it's state legislative seats. Democrats were ready to fight the old war. And the old war in redistricting was both sides tended to have a seat at the table. Both sides would draw their own maps. There would be a deadlock in the legislature. They would rush to the courts, and everybody would file and try to find a friendly judge to put it in front of. And the most important thing would be funding all of the lawyers and the legal strategies that were going on as these maps were deadlocked. Republicans decided to change the rules of the game. By taking all of these state legislative chambers, they locked the Democrats out. The Democrats didn't have a seat at the table. They had no power. And at the same time, the computer revolution happens. These computer software programs, the kind of information available, it simply wasn't as powerful or as prevalent or as available in 2000 as it was in 2010. So the timing for the Republicans is perfect, and they are able to pull this off. I mean, it's the data and the ease and the certainty with which it can be manipulated by these powerful programs that makes redistricting in 2010 so much different from any other time in our history.
Right? Now, David, your book, if I really said the entire name, Rat Fucked, I mean, you know, we can bleep that if we have to.
Can we say that on radio?
Well, on podcast we can. But, David, what does that really mean? Let's go back to that, because I think that's implicit in all that we're talking about.
Yeah. If I'm allowed to say the word, a rat fuck really is a dirty deed that is done dirt cheap, as AC/DC might say. I won't do the karaoke version of that for you. But, I mean, it takes its name essentially from some of the folks around Richard Nixon and around H.R. Haldeman back around, you know, politics in California in the 1960s and into Watergate. And it's also a term that's used in the 1990s around redistricting when Republicans come up with a very smart plan to form an alliance with African Americans in the South. And to use the Voting Rights Act in such a way as to draw a handful of majority-minority seats for African Americans to win, and Republicans take the rest of the seats in the South for themselves. So this is really the
well. We will get back to that because
that
I think
term.
That is relevant.
Yeah.
So that's
absolutely.
Where all of this comes from.
So
go on.
That's really where the term comes from those two examples in the 1960s, and 70s, and then in the 1990s. But Republicans only spent $30 million on this plan. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, this is the biggest heist in modern American politics. And I would call it a dirty deed. I mean, I think that it cheapens our vote. I think we did not agree to give these legislators 10-year terms. And I think it has taken the power to elect our local a legislator and our congressman or woman out of the hands of the people. And I would be opposed to this kind of dirty dealing no matter which side was doing it. Republicans played by the rules. It's all perfectly legal, but that doesn't make it any less dirty or devastating towards our democracy.
But having said that, were you misquoted when you said it was also the greatest political achievement in modern times?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, if you were to look at this, Republicans for $30 million captured a hammerlock on the U.S. House of Representatives probably for an entire decade, even in years when they get fewer votes. And they also achieved these huge hammerlocks in state legislatures in blue and purple states like North Carolina and Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, and many other states. It's a huge achievement. I don't think it's a positive achievement, but when you think about how, I mean, even in Connecticut, Linda McMahon spent $100 million on two losing races for the U.S. Senate. In New Hampshire in 2016, a small state like that, the U.S. Senate race cost $100 million. When you look at what the Republicans got for $30 million, how they took something that has been a part of American political history ever since Patrick Henry and reinvented it in this bold and audacious new way, I mean, it's a tremendous achievement. I mean, I think it has done, you know, lasting harm to the idea of representative democracy. But I can still marvel at its breathtaking audacity.
David, first, of course, you have to win all of these races that put these legislatures into Republican hands. But there's a second aspect to this, which you've touched upon, but I'd like to go a little bit deeper.
Absolutely.
Where the next year you have to go into the deep underground and redraw the maps. And that's a clandestine purpose, an approach that they take. And you talk about one practitioner of this in Wisconsin, just to illuminate the point.
Yes. So as to your first point, I mean, absolutely, Republicans won a huge election in 2010. The first Obama midterm was a Republican wave. They had many more votes. They captured some 680 state legislative seats nationwide. It was a huge win. But the spoils of that win really came the next year when they were able to go and redraw these districts. And so in a state like Ohio, Republican partisans retreated to a suite at the Doubletree, which they called the bunker, because politicians in a bunker can always be trusted to do what's at the public interest. And together with aides from the Republican National Committee and Speaker Boehner's political team, they sat down with the computer programs and drew these complicated algorithms based on, you know, amazing analysis of party line voting all the way down ballot, and it was genius, and it set themselves up in 2012 to take the state house with fewer votes and to win 75% of the congressional seats in the state with a bare majority of votes. In a state like Wisconsin, and this is the case that's about to head to the U.S. Supreme Court in October, Republicans went to a politically aligned a law firm across the street from the state capitol. They barricaded themselves in there. They claimed attorney-client privilege for the work they were doing there because it was happening in a law firm. They did the
now
same
that's
kind
clever.
Of, exactly, right? They did the same kind of analysis. They drew these amazing lines. When Democrats sued, the hard drives amazingly just got themselves wiped out completely. Judges were outraged. But Republicans won 60 of 99 seats in 2012 in Wisconsin for the state assembly, despite fewer votes. And that is what led to the Gill versus Whitford lawsuit that the court will be hearing this year.
Well, where are the courts in all this? In other words, after they go down deep and they try to reconstruct this without the opposition party or whatever, where is the third branch of government to say this is not fair, one man, one vote is being subverted? Where does that go in all of these states?
It's a great question. The U.S. Supreme Court has never found partisan gerrymandering to be unconstitutional. They have said that this is simply part of the political thicket, that this is politics, and this is the way it's done. Legislatures have the power to draw these lines, and the courts have not wanted to get involved. As the technology has gotten better, as politicians have become more devious about using this process to upend democracy, the courts have gotten more interested. So this case in Wisconsin is the first case in more than a decade to reach the Supreme Court. It holds the potential for the first standard on partisan gerrymandering that we have ever seen, and for a real red line to be drawn, and that, you know, tells the politicians and legislatures that are drawing these lines, you cannot go that far. These district lines are too important for your kind of fooling around with. We will see. I mean, it's all going to come down to Justice Kennedy, like so much does. Justice Kennedy has shown great interest in this topic. Back in 2004, which is the last time that partisan gerrymandering came before the court, in a case from Pennsylvania, the Veith case, you had four conservatives on the court that were ready to say partisan gerrymandering is non-justiciable. Let's wipe this off the table. And you had four liberals that were like, not so fast. I think we ought to be involved here. Kennedy said he sided with the conservatives ultimately on the ruling, but he was not willing to close the door on future cases. He said that the very technology that has made district drawing such an art and science could also provide the kind of clear and meaningful standard that could determine when a partisan gerrymander has gone too far. He's like, let's wait and see. That created a whole lot of interest by political science folks and stat geeks and law professors. So they have been working on a case on a standard that might convince Justice Kennedy. This may well be his last year on the court. He's likely to be replaced by another conservative in the Gorsuch mode. So this could be the last chance for a court standard on partisan gerrymandering for a generation.
Now, what about Arizona and independent commissions made up of judges? Or are we really looking, when we bring it out to something that is considered to be nonpartisan thus far, is that just a cover-up or a smokescreen?
I think that's right. I mean, when people say that line drawing is inherently political, they're right. I mean, it's really hard to take the politics out of politics, right? Most of these nonpartisan, you know, quote-unquote nonpartisan commissions are really bipartisan commissions, or the two parties are trying to game them as best as they can. I'm not sure that there's a great example anywhere in the country of a bipartisan commission that actually works, that is actually fair. I mean, in New Jersey, it's a fig leaf to protect incumbents. In Arizona, it's a good idea, certainly.
Well, explain what they've done in Arizona.
Sure. In Arizona, you had a deeply conservative legislature that was doing things like ending the Martin Luther King state holiday and getting the state boycotted by Bruce Springsteen and the NCAA and the Super Bowl. And once that a kind of thing happens, the state business community gets a little bit upset. You actually had a shopping mall magnet in Arizona is the person who puts on the ballot nonpartisan redistricting. Except the way that they do it, it's a five-person committee. It's two people appointed by Democrats. It's two people appointed by Republicans, and then an independent chair who was chosen through the appellate courts. So you immediately start off this nonpartisan districting with four partisans, right? And then you have one person, you know, a civilian whose job it is to stand up for all of the people of the state. Except both parties are trying to gain that yes. process as well by sneaking.
But at least they're horse trading, David, in that process.
Yeah,
so one exactly. is not at shut least, out totally.
Exactly. At least both sides are at the table. So it's certainly fairer in that regard. I do think independent districting is probably an improvement on pure political redistricting. But it's not better than simply not doing districting at all. We don't have to elect our members of Congress this way. There are better ways.
Well, I want to get to that, because you, as part of Fair Vote, and we'll get into that in a moment, because you're now taking on, in addition to being an author and an editor, you're taking on another responsibility, and I do want to get to that. But before we do that, I just want to know whether, in fact, we, in our various states, people listening across the country, whether they can detect, by virtue of the composition of their congressional delegation, or if they looked at a map and they saw these odd shapes on the map, is there a way, if there's not congruity to the way these districts look, that there's really been a fair amount of gerrymandering going on? Is there a way for people in their own states?
Yeah, I think it's really easy for people to look at the way that their state tends to vote, and then look at the makeup of your state house or of your congressional delegation. Pennsylvania is one of those states that, before 2016, had gone blue every single year since the mid-1980s. But it sends to Washington 13 Republicans and 5 Democrats. Ohio is the classic bellwether state, and it sends 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats. Michigan is a Democratic state largely. It sends 9 Republicans and 5 Democrats. Democrats have gotten more votes in every election on these maps since 2012 for the state house, but they've never taken back control of the state house in any of those elections. So when the side with more votes gets far fewer seats, that's one indication that something is going on. When your state is 50-50, but your delegation is 3-1 the other way, that's a sign that something
there's something rotten in Denmark.
Well, I mean, North Carolina is 10-3. I mean, North Carolina is a pretty 50-50 state. It's not 76 or 77% Republican. And this is never going to be perfect, but when it gets that out of whack, you know, something's going on.
All right. Now, let me ask you. You say the U.S. Supreme Court has a very important decision to make this year.
Yes.
Rarely have they gotten involved in political gerrymandering, but they have gotten involved in racial gerrymandering.
Yes.
And yet now where we're trying to carve out, or the Republicans are often, these very safe districts where they can put as many Democrats and many minorities in those districts so that somebody comes out, let's say John Lewis or someone else, with 80% of the vote,
right,
or 90.
90.
I mean, they're really trying to quarantine, I mean, ghettoize, may I say, those votes.
I think that's right. And that, it's not only that you create these districts that elect a Democrat with 80 or 90%. By packing all of those Democrats into as few seats as possible, you make all of the surrounding seats more conservative, whiter, more Republican. So that has been a go-to strategy, and it's been a very effective one for the Republicans.
And they try to make some of the districts for the Republicans not wildly lopsided so they can make certain that they get more. But all you have to win by is 52, 53%, and you're in.
And when people are as polarized as this, and when you know as much about the voters, and when the technology is this good, 52% once looked like a competitive district. But these days, a 52% district is a pretty solid Republican district. So it's not going to turn that much. So you can draw districts that look like they might be close, but because of the nature of partisanship and polarization in this age, they're not actually in play.
So are the Democrats trying to duplicate Operation Red Map for 2020, or even should we look for telltale signs of what they're doing in 2018 in preparation, or, you know, is there going to be an Operation Blue Map, I guess is what I'm asking?
Well, the Democrats have finally awoken from their slumber of 2010. They figured out what happened. I mean, I think it took them a couple of years to actually understand it and come to grips with it. Former President Obama and his Attorney General, Eric Holder, are running something called the National Democratic Redistricting Committee, and their goal is to flip state legislatures back the other way by 2020. It's an uphill fight. They're going to have less money than the Republicans. They're going to have no element of surprise. And the hardest thing of all is they have to find a way to win on these maps, something that they have not been able to do all decade, even when they've gotten more votes. So it's a real challenge. I think that, first, I don't think it's a good thing, because I don't think we want our political debates to come down to every 10 years we have a fight over redistricting and whoever wins the 0 year wins the next decade. I think that is dangerous and bad for our politics and for our democracy. But I also don't think that it will be an effective strategy for the Democrats. For the Democrats, all of this comes down to a handful of governor's races in 2018. The state legislatures in these key states are gone. They are not coming back in 2020.
Really?
I mean, the state house in Ohio is 66-33 Republican. In North Carolina, it's 74-45. In Wisconsin, it's a 65-34. These chambers are not going to go Democratic in the next 2 years or 4 years. If Democrats want to win a seat at the table in any of these states, and I keep coming back to these handful of states because these are the most gerrymandered states in the country, and these are the states where the big Republican gains have been made. If Democrats want a seat at the table in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Wisconsin in 2021, they have to win the governor's races in those states in 2018, because those governors will be in office in 2021 and have veto power over the maps. If Democrats are looking to 2020 and seeing this as trying to flip these legislative chairs, then they will be focused on the wrong year, and it will be way too late. The fight for redistricting in 2020 and 2021 is going to be over on Election Day 2018, and it's all going to come down to the results of those governor races. I don't think it's too far to – I don't think it's hyperbole to say that the future of the Democratic Party for the next decade rests on the outcome of those five races.
That's really interesting. And those races, I mean, when we look at it, and we have to remind people – that once they come out of the lawyers' offices or the deep underground or the double tree, then whatever the handiwork of the partisans, in this case the GOP, has been, has to go to the legislature to be ratified and then approved by the governor. So these processes do rise to a point where they come into public view.
Yes, eventually they do. But usually by then it's too late. I mean, in North Carolina right now, the courts have mandated that they draw new maps for the entire state legislative races. These maps were most likely already drawn in private, and then they get introduced to the public. I mean, in Florida, this is my favorite example. In Florida in 2010, voters passed something called the Fair Districts Amendment, and they required that there be no partisan nonsense going on with either the maps of the state legislature or Congress. And within a month, the smartest Republican strategists in the state were gathered, and they were trying to figure out how to get around this. They came up with this amazing secret shadow redistricting process in which all of the consultants drew these incredibly detailed maps and studied all their algorithms in the back room, and then they funneled those maps into the public process by having regular citizens like their wives and husbands and neighbors, even interns of the state Republican Party under phony Gmail addresses created in their names, smuggle those maps into the public process where the legislators simply adopted those maps. I mean, the lengths that politicians will go to keep control of this process, even in the face of a constitutional amendment telling them that they can't, I think that ought to be a sign to the rest of us of just how important they know these lines are.
Well, you are now with a group called Fair Vote. And your executive director, Rob Ritchie, had an op-ed in the New York Times in the summer of 2017 with another gentleman, Raihan Salam. And they are proposing the Fair Representation Act. Start with Fair Vote. So if people are interested in this topic, the work that Fair Vote is doing, and then tell us what the Fair Representation Act attempts to do.
Absolutely. Fair Vote is a nonpartisan electoral group. We're based just outside Washington, D.C., and really our aim is trying to bring more choices and more voices into the American electoral process. Our number one issue is ranked choice voting. We believe that by allowing people to rank their choices, what you get is a fairer a process in which politicians are actually also competing to be your number two choice and not just your number one. And it brings back moderation. It takes politics away from the extremes. And we were talking earlier about the kind of bridge builders in Congress.
Mm.
Who simply aren't there anymore. And there is an entire swath of the American electorate that simply isn't being represented.
Well, tens of millions who consider themselves centrist. And, of course, we did very well under centrists like JFK and Eisenhower and Truman. Where have they gone?
They're still there. The problem is the way that winner-take-all districts work doesn't allow their voices to be heard. There are still Republicans in New England. There are still Democrats across the South. There are independents all over America. There are Greens and there are Libertarians. The trouble is you cannot draw districts in which these candidates win. So what the Fair Representation Act aims to do is to create multi-member congressional districts. So you have the same number of people in Congress, the same number from every state, except you have larger districts. And by having larger districts, you take away the power of the gerrymander. You make it almost impossible to gerrymander these districts. And you use ranked choice voting to elect people from these states.
Okay, now, so, make it as simple for us to understand as possible, because for most of us, these are rather foreign concepts.
You know, it's actually as easy as 1, 2, 3. It's quite simple. And this is how the voters of choose best picture. It's how we choose our MVP and our Cy Young Award winners in baseball. So take a state like Connecticut. You have 5 Democrats representing Connecticut right now, or a state like Oklahoma, in which I believe they have 7 members of Congress. All of them are Republicans. All of the Republicans in Connecticut are not being heard in Washington. All of the Democrats in Oklahoma are not being heard in Washington. That doesn't mean that they're not there. So if you were to elect all 5 of Connecticut's congressmen statewide, you would be able to vote 1-5 and rank all of the candidates on the ballot. And if you had more than 1/5 of the vote plus 1, you would get a seat. This would elect probably 2 Republicans from the state of Connecticut. It would probably elect a couple of Democrats from Oklahoma. And in the process, you would bring cooperation back. Suddenly you would have multi-member districts in which Democrats and Republicans both represented the same people. They would have to talk to each other. They would have to work together. We would have to be fighting to be each other's second and third choice in these races. You would open up Congress to third parties and to visionaries and to bridge builders who right now have no electoral feasibility in the system. You would get rid of the kind of winner-take-all mentality in which you have to do this kind of twisty mathematical algorithm. Well, I really want to vote for this person, but is my vote for this person actually going to backfire on me and elect the person that I like the least? We have to get all of that kind of thinking out of our politics, and that's what the Fair Representation Act does.
Now, in Connecticut, because we have fewer than 6 representatives, it would be statewide.
Yes.
In other states like New York or California, what would you have to do to make these districts larger and more involved with multi-members?
This is where you would have an independent commission whose job it would be to draw these lines.
Mm-hmm.
But the drawing of the lines in many ways, right now, it's of foremost importance. If the districts were bigger, they're almost impossible to gerrymander. We've done the computer simulations of this. It's almost impossible to gerrymander larger districts like this, and it's also almost impossible to find a multi-member district in this country that would not elect both Democrats and Republicans. And that's an amazing thing, and it could truly transform our
country. And I guess if you look at the U.S. Senate, you go back to 2012, you had Barack Obama winning, you had Democrats winning the majority, and then you had Republicans taking over the House. So that's an example where statewide it was a very different picture than these carved-out districts.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, take a look at Massachusetts. I mean, Massachusetts right now is represented entirely by Democrats. But you have a Republican governor of Massachusetts.
Who's very popular.
Who's very popular. You have only had, I believe, one Democratic governor in Massachusetts since Michael Dukakis. You had Weld and Esalucci and, an entire list of Republican governors of Massachusetts over the last 25 years, 30 years. There are Republicans in Massachusetts, but the geography of the state and the districting of the state doesn't allow them to have a voice in Congress, and that's not fair.
Yeah, and in fact, Donald Trump got a lot of votes in Massachusetts,
yeah.
I think more than he got in six other states. Well, with all this said, David, I know Maine has adopted some of these reforms. Where are we going with our electoral process, and how confident are you that a lot of these indignities to one man, one vote are going to be rectified over the next 5 to 10 years?
I think we're reaching a breaking point and a tipping point, and I think that more and more people are aware of this. I think that you have so much energy being directed down ballot right now and at the local level in our politics, that there is a hunger for electoral reform in the system that I've never seen before. So I do hope that all of this energy gets channeled into, you know, serious, productive reforms that actually meaningfully change the structure of our politics. Am I optimistic that that will happen? I think that it is a heavy lift. I think that we are super close to Republicans having complete control over the process again in 2021. I am excited at the prospect of a Supreme Court ruling on gerrymandering, but in the end, it all comes down to one justice. So I'm not eager to sort of put all of the eggs in that basket. And I do believe that, you know, so much is riding on a handful of governor's races in 2018 for the Democrats, if they want to try to have a seat back at the table, that the Democrats don't have a very strong bench or candidates in a lot of these states. So I don't think that they will be favored in very many of those races. But I think we have to keep talking. This is a conversation. I mean, the Fair Representation Act, like you said, and these ideas of ranked choice voting and multi-member districts, these are new ideas, and they have to be introduced into the conversation. And I'm very heartened at the idea of continuing to have these conversations. I'm heartened at how people get it once we start talking about it. But I also think that it's an uphill fight, and that the system indeed is as rigged as folks on both sides thought it was in 2016.
Well, go to fairvote.org for a lot of ideas like this. Dave Daly, I thank you so much for being with us, the former editor-in-chief at Salon, now with Fair Vote. He wrote that book, Rat Fucked, and it really was a pleasure to have you with us today, and a perfect topic for americatrendspodcast.com.
Absolutely, anytime, Larry. Thank you for all the work you do.
If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes, because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some ranking, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier. on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share
no
our
spamming,
lists.
No spamming, nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Even
nobody's
if they
asked us. But.
Right.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms, and John, this is really easy, @TrendsPodcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out
quiz.
Now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map. Our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that, too.
We're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us @TrendsPodcast or using the #TrendsPodcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back
just
to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more, because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste, and you get more programming like this, and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works
Absolutely.
For all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. Let us out.
What's that?
Let us out.
Let us out. No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there. If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes, because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some rankings, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share
no
our
spamming,
lists.
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Even
nobody's
if they
asked us. But.
Right.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms, and John, this is really easy, at Trends Podcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did
yeah,
you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map. Our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using the hashtag Trends Podcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? You know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back
just
to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste and you get more programming like this and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works
absolutely
for all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. And let us out.
What's that?
Let us out.
Let us out. No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day. That for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day.